Hi everyone, my name is Vusum Dinglande and this is The Journey Kwantu. It's actually strange to be greeting at the beginning of an episode instead of at the end, but this is a kind of a different episode. COVID-19 is here and it is forcing us to approach our lives very, very differently. We are in week 5 of the lockdown and the restricted movements have impacted on how I put together the episodes. For one thing, I can't do interviews in person, but I've been very reluctant to do interviews over the phone or online because I strongly believe that there is such an important energy that is conjured when two people sit together and connect in person. I've been waiting for the lockdown to end in order to resume with the work, but that's rather naive of me. Things are not going to go back to normal anytime soon. In fact, our lives have changed dramatically forever. As I've been trying to figure out a new way forward, I decided to do an episode where I share on some of the experiences that I've had in putting together this series and some of the thought processes that go into putting the episodes together as well. So this is The Journey Kwantu behind the scenes. In the last episode, I explored the history of Shebeen Queens and how the Shebeen culture of the 1920s onwards shaped our African spirituality as we know it today. But it's actually not what I had set out to do initially. Since a big part of the series is based on retracing or peeling back some of the layers of my spiritual grounding, I ended up spending a lot of time with my mother, since she was the very first person who basically introduced me to God. This led me down the history of Christianity in the context of South Africa. I gained a better understanding of not only my mother's views on spirituality, but I actually felt as though I met my grandmother again all over. I got to understand how Black women were forced to navigate through our country's history at a complete disadvantage. In fact, episode 3 ends almost tragically, but I'll get back to that a bit later. After learning just how much of an impact my grandmother had on my mother, I started to be curious about my grandfather, my mother's father, and how he fit into the whole picture. Even though my grandfather was present in my mother's life throughout her whole childhood, my mother rarely says anything about him. All I knew was that he worked at a beer hall. From that little piece of information, I gathered that him working at the beer hall birthed in him a drinking problem, and it also led to him being emotionally absent as a father and as a partner. So I wanted to understand the beer halls. I wanted to understand the lasting impact that they had on Black society. What I found was the intriguing and yet conflicted history of Shebeen Queens. Throughout all these episodes, I was building up to a topic that I've been dreading to deal with. From the time I started interviewing my mother and delving into Black women's historical and current relationship with spirituality, I knew that one day, eventually, I would need to confront the state of Black men's spirituality. this made me nervous, and the reason it made me nervous was because I was afraid of what I would possibly find. The identity of black men and his presence in society is so troubled. We as black men account for so much of what is wrong with us as a society. So I wanted to look into, how did we get here? How did we become like this? And by we, I mean black men as sons, as brothers, as fathers, as partners and husbands and uncles. At which point did we lose ourselves? At which point did we lose our way? How did this impact us on a spiritual level? And by this I mean, how did we become so spiritually absent? In doing this, would I be using myself again as a starting point like I did for the first episode? I feel like I would need to, but my problem is that the person I would need to interview died 12 years ago. Thinking about an episode dealing with black men's spirituality also made me anxious because of the possibility of having to revisit my relationship with my father. And also, how much of my private life do I actually want to share online? Nonetheless, I actually tried to imagine how an interview with my father on African spirituality would actually go. And to be honest, I don't know. Asking my father about his views on African spirituality would have been tricky. For one thing, I don't recall him ever saying anything about God or the divine or Badimu or anything like that. Not a single word. Nothing in my memory comes. But he did practice, in a way. Yes. So here's what would happen, right? On a random evening, me and my mother and my sister would be sitting, and my father would leave the room and then come back again carrying a big bucket and ishoba, and then he would dip ishoba in the water and basically swoosh everything in the house. And he did this in total silence, right? He left the room in silence, he came back in silence, and then once everything has been drenched, he would leave, and then he would come back again and sit down and continue watching TV like nothing happened. It was the most bizarre experience ever. And I have to emphasize that he never said anything to anyone about anything. I developed a deep hatred for African spiritual practices because of how my father approached it. The secrecy, I honestly hated it. And also, there was always this threat of some kind. Everyone that we went to always created this sense of my life was in danger because of jealous neighbors and all of those things. And I hated the doubt that it created in me. Looking back now and knowing what I know about the kinds of dangers that lie in the world and how people can be a danger to others through spiritual manipulation, do I still think that his approach was wrong? That's difficult to answer. My problem with my father's approach to African spirituality was that it was based on fear and extreme paranoia. And when fear is the basis of your actions, I think you become a danger to yourself because you force yourself to diminish your own light. You live a life that is centered around desperation and deep insecurity, and you end up not knowing yourself outside of that desperation and those fears. And that's the reality of black society as we're living it today. The reality of not knowing what black men's motivations are. In episode 2, it became apparent that for some of our grandmothers, they turned to the church and turned to their children against African spirituality as a survival mechanism because they knew that the socio-political aim of the apartheid system would crush them if they went against it. Black women, through the church, helped to dismantle African spirituality. Abomama Bomthandazo were pivotal in breaking down some aspects of African beliefs. This is something that we can lay bare and confront. We can put their actions in the context of their era and look at the consequences of those actions. But ultimately, we know that they believe that they were trying to achieve something outside of themselves. They saw themselves as having a duty towards their broader communities. As conflicting as this may be, we know without a shadow of a doubt that our mothers and our grandmothers carried the entirety of Black society on their backs, literally and figuratively. We can interrogate this and have a clear understanding of their actions, but it's difficult to interrogate the actions of Black men. It is difficult to understand what broader role Black men play in our society. All that Black men seem to hold on to is the idea of being a provider, and the minute the socioeconomics change, the moment he cannot fulfill the role of providing, it seems his existence in its entirety disappears and he becomes something else. What disturbs me the most is that for the majority of Black men, there seems to be no spiritual basis for anything that we do. And that is what I wanted to explore in that episode, and I am trusting that it will happen. When I created this series, I purposely didn't want to talk about the esoteric aspects of spirituality. I didn't want to talk about things to do with ukuthwasa or rituals or dream interpretations or such, because I believe that there are people who can do a far better job than I can. There are amazing healers like Gogo Moyo who have platforms that cover a lot of these topics extensively, and they base their knowledge on lived experiences. What I wanted to learn and share with you was, how did we get here? How did we get to this point in our spirituality as a people? And that is why so much of this series is based on history. However, the esoteric has been a fundamental part of the series. This work is guided, and much of it is touched by Idlozi. The end of episode 3 touched a lot of people. There was a part that was, in a way, gut-wrenching to listen to, and it was almost transcendent in its experience. I would like to take you through how that particular moment on episode 3 came to be. About 2 years ago, I felt deeply compelled to research African spirituality. And by that I mean I became obsessed with learning anything and everything that I could. I spent hours a day literally studying all sorts of things. And I came across a thesis by someone that was centered around the kind of music that evokes trance in healers within the sphere of African beliefs, but more specifically, indigenous people in Mozambique. There was a particular part in the thesis where the author spoke about how some cultures use imbira to evoke trance. If you don't know what an imbira is, take a listen to this. My understanding has always been that isigubhu is used to evoke trance. A part of this is because of the frequency of the drum, and especially the volume and its intensity. So the idea that an instrument as gentle as imbira could evoke trance was actually dumbfounding to me, but yet it was there and it seemed to me it was a real thing. Anyway, so Fast forward to September of 2019, and I was in Limpopo attending one of the most amazing ceremonies that I've ever been to, called Malopo, which basically celebrates the African New Year at the beginning of spring. While I was there, I met a lot of amazing individuals and healers, and I got to experience their presence and their knowledge. The ceremony takes about 3 days. On one of those days, on a warm evening, we were sitting outside while listening to drums in the distance, and we're having beautiful conversations. And while we're talking, a brother by the name of Aza took out an imbira and he started playing. And I happened to have my recorder at the time, even though I didn't really know what I was going to use it for. And as he started playing, one of my hosts, Ukoko, went into the most gentle trance that I had ever seen. It was a profound experience in that what Idlozi wanted to do in that very moment was to sing. And Idlozi sang the most haunting yet beautiful song that I'd ever heard. I recorded that moment, but I had no intentions of sharing it at any point. Fast forward again to a couple of weeks ago when I was putting episode 3 together. I had done so much research on how Black women experienced the apartheid system and even before that, and all the sacrifices that they had to make and how they basically sacrificed themselves for the sake of Black society as a whole. And for those weeks that I was busy with the research, something very, very heavy weighed on my spirit. I knew it was related to the research, but it was almost deeper than that. I would sometimes find myself overwhelmed by sadness, out of nowhere really, with no specific reason. There would be moments where I would have tears flowing down my face, and I was quite shocked by this. And there was a moment where I realized that I was actually not the one who was sad. I was not the one who was crying, even though tears were streaming down my eyes. The person who was crying, or the people who were weeping, were the people that I walk with, the lineages of mothers that came before me. They were crying through me. And I struggled to actually record that episode. I had to do it several times. And I remember in one evening when I was doing the final recording, I basically had a breakdown. And I just felt all these intense emotions of sorrow wash over me. And as this was happening, the song that I heard in that ceremony last year under that warm night in Limpopo came back to me. That sound of imbira and the trance that it evoked through Ukoko was something that echoed through the whole moment. And I couldn't actually figure out why that was. And I spent about 2 days trying to figure out why this song kept playing over and over again in my head as I was trying to make this recording. And I suppose, I suppose it became clear that those who were putting this work together with me wanted this song to be included in the recording. But this was a difficult situation for me because I had sworn that I would never share such recordings of such intimate or trance moments with the general public. But I could not shake the feeling that this was something that needed to be included in that episode. So I contacted Ugogo, and it's funny because she actually, obviously, she didn't even remember that I had recorded her in trance in that moment. And I was quite worried that she would have been offended by it, firstly, and be even more offended by the fact that I wanted to share it with you guys. And but I could not deny the fact that this was weighing very heavy on my spirit. So I contacted her and I actually sent her the recording. And I waited with bated breath for her to tell me how crappy it is of me to have recorded that, or how crappy it is of me to want to share it. But she was taken quite aback by it. But her response was almost just as profound, because her exact words were, "They are telling me to tell you that you should use it, and it's important that you be the one to use it." When I read that WhatsApp message, I just felt a shot of, I don't know what, just slide down my spine. And I suppose I had gotten the confirmation that I needed, and I could go ahead and include it. And this is basically what it came down to. We are in a very difficult period in our history. In many ways, what is happening now is unprecedented, and we all have fears. We all have doubts. Many of us are trying to navigate through spirituality, and we are riddled with fear. I would like to compel you to, for a moment, just put down your fear. I know that you cannot get rid of it entirely, but put it aside for a moment and just let yourself experience yourself. The answers that you desperately seek are already there. I would like to tell you from my personal experience that everything is connected. some of the answers that you are looking for take years to connect. If you were looking for a sentence that would be the answer to your most deepest fears, I can almost tell you that each word of that sentence that you're looking for, you will find in the most strangest of places. Don't let desperation rule you. Don't let your current situation rule you. Understand that you come from a long line of people who had been through many, many things. You come from a line of people who have been through much worse than what we are going through now. And it is the strength that you gather now that will be the strength that your descendants will use after you. My name is Vusumzi Ncwande. Thank you for joining me on this episode. I wish you courage, and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.